This episode of Own the Gray is brought to you by I Am. Discover your unique talents, realize your potential, and align to your path. Take the first step to uncover your life purpose by visiting deborahjones.ca/courses. If there's been a change in your circumstances, and you find yourself wondering, who am I? What is my purpose now? Or you've lost your job, got divorced, or recently retired. Or the kids have left home, and you've got more time for yourself, but you don't know what to do with it. These life transition times can make anyone feel untethered. Well, Karen Herbert is a professional core leadership and life coach with a degree in philosophy, and we had a conversation about how to find direction in a time of transition and about making a decision to reconnect with who you are and what you might want now. It was an enjoyable, enlightening conversation, full of wisdom worth sharing. Listen in, it'll be time well spent. Welcome to Own the Gray, a podcast to dispel the notion that aging is undesirable and setting new, positive attitudes. I'm Deborah Jones, and I believe you can be vibrant and healthy throughout the best years of your life.
Hi, Deborah. How are you? It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I've been looking forward to this.
Me too.
You are a transition coach, and you help women transition their lives when they become empty nesters, especially. What made you focus on that niche, or what was your story?
Well, as so often is the case, it's our own life experience and story that many times leads us to those that we work with. And for me, both approaching the empty nest and really engaging with it has been such a transitional pivoting point in my life. And I think I actually started looking ahead when my children, I have three kids, were in high school, and they were all in high school at the same time. And there were just so many challenging circumstances in my life at the time, both my own health challenges and the health challenges and mental health challenges of my family, that I almost felt like I couldn't look beyond where I was in that moment. It was just doing the next thing and trying to overcome the next emergency or obstacle. And I just felt very burdened, and I wanted to look ahead, but I almost felt like I couldn't get beyond where I was. And I just made a decision that even though there was very little I could do at that time to carve out working through the next steps, I made a decision to do that. And I think there was a moment where I realized that I was feeling like all of my challenges were obstacles to doing what I was meant to do. And I just realized these actually can't stop me from bringing what I meant to bring to the world. And once I really engaged with and believed that, then I felt like I was able to really enlarge my vision and start moving forward.
So were you a coach before that transition time, or did you become a coach afterwards?
I became a coach pretty much in that time when my kids were in high school. So that was part of my own process of moving into something new for myself. So for many years, I've been at home managing the challenges of our family and dealing with unique schooling situations. My background is actually in philosophy. So I had a lot of interest in psychology, and I'd done a lot of personal development. And there was a lot in my work with my family that really prepared me for moving into the coaching space. So it was new, but it seemed to really build on all of these foundational things that had come before in my life.
As a healer, I talk to a lot of women in that time of their life. And I find that one of the main issues is they realize that they
need to focus on themselves, but they don't know who they are at that point. You know, they were mother and wife and that was it.
Yes.
But they had, you know, maybe some other interests. But now that their kids were preparing to leave the nest, or if they've already left the nest, there's sort of an empty hole that we're trying to fill, but we don't know what to fill it with. That's kind of what I've been seeing. Do you notice that in your clients?
Yes, I really have to agree with you that there can be this hole in our sense of purpose, because there's been so much of us invested in this calling, vocation, relationships, and rightly so. And that huge investment then, when there's a time when that's transitioning and all those relationships are going to look so differently and our role is different, our responsibility is different, it really can leave us with that question, well, what's my purpose now? Or what is next for me now? And motherhood changes us. It really does. And it's not just that we haven't been focusing on ourselves for so long, but we're different people than we were before. And so all that journey and process of reconnecting with who we are and what we want now and who we want to be moving forward are just those pivotal, vital questions, I think, that women in this transition do ask.
I have a lot of questions about that, but I just want to back up for a minute. So we talked about women, and I know on your website, it says that you focus on helping women. But my question is, do you find the men go through this as well?
Well, my comments here are going to be mostly observational. I feel that men in general, and this isn't every man, but I think they experience the empty nest in a different way, because I think the transition and the relationships aren't as stringent for them. So they don't experience that same sense of loss in the same way. And sometimes I think it can be a challenge for men and women to connect around what they're experiencing in the empty nest transition, because on the one hand, every individual is going to experience it in a unique way. And then more generally, men and women tend to experience it in a different way. And it can be hard to understand why it's affecting one spouse or partner in one way and another one in a different way.
And then I would think then that gives us a whole new set of issues to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
other than just what we're feeling about being, you know, left alone in the home. Then we've got our emotions and our spouse's emotions to deal with at the same time. So what's the way out of this? What tips do you have that would help somebody start to move out of that feeling that feels difficult?
There's a number of steps in any transition. And I think it just really helps to understand I'm in a transition here. And this is not something that I'm just going to say, okay, last week my kids were here, now they're gone, let's move on. There's a process that has to unfold, and there's a number of stages to that process. And to appreciate the stages of the process, which involve an ending, which is going to have loss and feelings of insecurity and feelings of chaos and unknown and disattaching from things. And then there's a period of just things are in upheaval. I'm not sure where I belong. I don't know what I want. I don't know who I am. And starting in that process to engage with the transition in a way that really leads to something new. And I think this is something we miss in our Western culture, is this idea that, one, transitions are part and parcel of life. And there's a way to engage with them that leads to a new way of being if I allow it to. And it's not just about the external. So William Bridges talks about, you know, we experience change all the time, but change is external. And transition is about entering into engaging with a change in a way that leads to something new in me, that changes me, that transforms me. So I come out of my transition, and this is the third stage, into something new, a new role, a new place in the community, a new sense of purpose, a new reason to get up in the morning. But if we're not engaging with and allowing that process to happen, then a lot of change can happen, but it's just external and it's not transformative on a deeper level.
So what I'm hearing also then is a lot of it relies on your perspective of what it is you're going through and seeing it in a positive light rather than what might feel like negative, where we're focused on the loss aspect and I don't know who I am and the unknown. What I'm hearing is to have some type of an idea of a structure, something that is being created, like the phoenix rising out of the fire type of thing. What do you want to create from this situation? I think that would be one of the first questions that I would ask myself.
Yes, I think that's very true. And in many ways, we have to hold together that positive and negative and appreciate with compassion what we're experiencing, because we are experiencing that, and yet also know that it's going somewhere new. And this is part of what was so beautiful about just some Native people's cultures, where they would have structured transitional ceremonies around some particular transitions in life. And they would symbolize in the whole ceremony, I'm leaving this behind now. Now I'm in this period of chaos and unknown and insecurity. And, you know, maybe you even go out in the wilderness and live there for however long, because that's part of the transition and it's not pleasant. It's hard. Yet we know that we'll return and enter into this new life and a new place in the community. So there was this vision that, yes, this is challenging and hard, and I need to be in it for now. And I'm going somewhere new. There is something after this, and it will be transformative, and I will bring something unique to the world around me. It'll just look different.
So we're not likely to be going out into the wilderness. So this vision quest idea, is there a more Western approach to this vision quest idea that you could share?
Well, I found that it's really important to be careful, because in the Western world, we like to be very left brain about all of this. So there is a lot in our culture about finding purpose, finding meaning, finding why, and creating that in our life and at points in transition as well. The problem is, in our left brain, we want to break everything down. We want step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You do these things, you ask these questions, you have, boom, your paragraph that tells you what your new life is going to look like and what your meaning and purpose is. It speaks to us because we want that clarity. We want that security. But if you contrast that with something like the Japanese conception of ikigai, which itself gets very Westernized, it's a very right-brained approach. It's a very process-oriented approach, and it really focuses on moments in daily life that make your life worth living. And if you can reconnect with yourself and really develop a deeper self-awareness of who you are in your life right now and let go of some things that maybe have served you in the past, but really aren't useful or necessary in moving forward, then we can be freed up to start to look for the new things in our life that give us a reason to get up in the morning, that make life worth living. And there are processes. I have my own process, but they have to be flexible. They have to be intuitive. They have to be personalized, because there is no clear formula, even in the how, for any individualized person. And this has really actually been one of the blessings of living in close proximity to mental illness, is there's a very high focus in trying to function with mental illness on creating a life worth living and what that looks like and how to engage with life in a way that creates meaning. And one of the myths we have is that we have to go big or go home. Purpose is some enormous big thing. And if I can just isolate it with my left brain and do it, that's, you know, my big purpose in life. And that's actually quite misleading. I was surprised to discover in working with women and giving talks about purpose that women would say, I didn't want to come to your talk because, you know what, I just retired and I thought I was going to leave and feel like I'd wasted my whole life. I didn't have purpose, that there was something big I was supposed to be doing. But if they, when they shifted their mindset around what it really looks like and micro purpose as well as macro purpose, and not just align purpose, but creating purpose when things come that we're not so crazy about in life, it's a much fuller perspective about creating a life worth living that brings meaning to us.
So you have your processes that work when you individualize it for your clients. As you were talking, I was envisioning writing a list for myself of one side, the things that inspire me, and the other side, the things that I would be happy to let go of if I could, for instance. You know, writing a list so that you can actually see it in black and white on paper, I find is one way to get out of the emotion or the debilitating emotion when we're faced with a conundrum or we're faced with a situation that we're unsure of. Do you have anything to add or any comments on if that's effective in your opinion?
I think that is definitely one way of creating awareness, especially if you're a visual person. It really helps you to lay it all out. It can create that certain sense of objectivity that you were talking about. So there's many ways to create awareness. And part of it is, you know, exercises like you're saying, or if you're a journaler, many people are journaling about where they find joy and meaning and inspiration in their life. But also asking some underlying questions like, well, what is it about that that inspires me? Or why is it that I become engaged with this or that this other thing disengages me? Because there's layers to our experience, and it's not always say the task or the activity or the thing that you're engaging in that creates your emotion around it. There's a lot of different things that can create that emotion. And a lot of times, and I can't remember where I read this, but the person said, you know, sometimes finding meaning is just like taking a walk around your own neighborhood and trying to look at things in a different way, from a different perspective. Things that you've overlooked that could be inspiring to you if this thing shifted in them. Exercises like that actually help us understand ourselves better. I know there are many things in my life that I've decided I don't like, or I'm not the kind of person who does that, or I've tried that and failed, so that's not going to give me life. And in other situations, when I've re-engaged with this or that from a different place, I found that if I brought a different part of myself to that thing, actually, it could be very life-giving. And I do agree with you that many people find it helpful to sort of write out those things or even the answers to those questions as they look through their life with more intentionality, and it creates a deeper awareness. So it's sort of this back and forth between who am I and understanding myself, which influences what I'm engaging with in a meaningful way. But also as I engage meaningfully and live purposefully, I really create deeper awareness about who I am and who I'm made to be and what I can do, which sometimes surprises people what they actually can do.
It's an evolution, though, isn't it? I think it's really important to realize that, as you said, it's not this one thing or this one task or lack of this one thing that is going to give us the fulfillment, but to realize that to give ourselves permission to evolve. And I think that giving ourselves permission piece comes up a lot in my healing room. We feel that we're stuck. We feel that we're restricted. Any words that anyone has said to us in the past that tells us we can't do something is kind of stuck there in the back of our head. So it's an avenue we won't explore because we think we shouldn't. And yes. So that giving ourselves permission piece to do things differently is always that transformation key, I find.
I fully agree with you, Deborah. I'm so glad that you mentioned giving ourselves permission. And I too have found that to be very powerful in working with people that can shift a lot and move into a whole new direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in this midlife transition. So there was a heading in one of your articles or website. It said, how to avoid a meaningless midlife. And I thought, whoa, that's a powerful headline. Would you like to talk to that?
I just encountered it more generally. And I think it's almost like this tendency or this inclination to wander through life. And, you know, like there's these stages of life. So, okay, now I'm having my kids and now we're really busy and they're in all of their sports activities. And now we're looking at schools for them and looking at, you know, potential careers. And now they're leaving. Okay, so now I'm just going to do whatever's next, whether that's, well, now I'm going to wait for the grandkids or now I'm going to find a hobby. Or I think the question that comes up a lot is, well, now I have this time, what should I do to fill my time? Mm-hmm. And it's really the wrong question to ask, but because we're not just filling our time. We're engaging with things that align with who we are, or we're bringing who we are to create purpose in the things that we're engaged with in an intentional way. And so we like to say, we don't want to wander through midlife. We want to explore. And it's a different mindset and a different approach to what comes next. And it's still very process oriented. But a lot of times we make choices and we do things and we fill our time without really thinking about it and being intentional and asking the deeper questions. So even those experiences aren't really going to be meaningless, but there's so much potential. There's so much more to who we are and how we can choose to live. And that's what I think my husband and I in this work want to call people onto. There's more, and that doesn't mean a big movement. It can be something very small even in your life, but that still is greater and connected to who you are.
I love that. I love that exploring through life and you know, what is around the corner? What is under that stone? Mm-hmm. What is the one thing that I used to love when I was a kid? And can I do it again now? And mm-hmm. I find, you know, once I hit that 50 mark, I think that's the magic number when things start shifting in your own mind and physiology as well. But I remember feeling that I need to refocus my purpose or why I'm here or what I'm doing. And as you said, it doesn't have to be in a big way. It can just be in small ways. But the transition that I'm referring to is that as we get older and wiser, we start to give back to the society that we've taken from or learned from or worked with. And I think as we get older, we have so much wisdom and experience. And we talked about Indigenous and Native traditions. We don't sit around the fire talking to all the different ages of the community anymore. We're not sharing our wisdom in the same way. And I find that if you just focused on communicating with people, talking with people and sharing what your opinion is or your wisdom or your skill or whatever it might be, that itself brings some meaning and purpose into your life.
I just love that you mentioned that, Deborah. And it makes me think of just the deep meaning there is in having something to offer. And I actually hear this a lot with the moms that we work with who perhaps have been at home with their kids for a number of years. And they can get in this space and just feel like, well, I don't have anything to offer. And they have amazing wisdom to offer. They have amazing experience. They have a lot to give. But there's this sense of, I haven't done anything. I haven't built anything. I don't have anything to offer. I feel invisible, like people don't even care what I have to say. And so there is this really beautiful element in connecting more deeply with a believing we have something to offer. And every single person has something beautiful and unique to contribute and has their own style of wisdom. It's just a matter of tapping into it, of believing in it, and finding the ways that bring life to us to share that with others and connect it to something bigger than ourselves. And it's very beautiful to watch someone be able to reconnect, to create some confidence around who they are and step into what they have to offer. And I have found this myself. It often takes other people to help us see what that is that we are not thinking is that big of a deal, or not paying attention to, or not appreciating, because usually we're already bringing it in some way. It was a part of how we parented our kids. It's a part of how we relate to other people. It's our beautiful strengths and values in action. We just need to recognize them and do a little shifting to figure out where they go.
That is so profound. And it's really touching on the heart of the topic that we're talking about. And you'd mentioned about the confidence, the self-confidence piece. I find as a healer is one of the areas that I work on the most, work with the most, because as you said, it sometimes takes somebody else to point it out to us. Mm-hmm. We walk through life with blinders of thinking we are this or we are not this. And it takes somebody else to look at us from, say, from behind and say, well, this is what I see. You can't see that because you're facing that direction, but I can see that part of you. And if I share that with you, maybe you want to own it. Maybe you can identify with it. Maybe it's something you want to grow into. But I think the work that you do as a coach and the work that I do as a healer, I would call myself a coach of sorts as well, to help people find themselves. I think that is so important to know that we can't always do it alone.
Yes. Yes, I totally agree. And as you were talking, Deborah, I just became very inspired because I started noticing just in this moment, you know, I do this in my work, but I'm wondering what would happen if I just expanded this more generally, like if I had an intention in engaging with people to point those things out to people I meet. Like, how powerful is that when we're just in normal life interacting with people and someone reflects back to us who we are in a new way that we hadn't considered, or a strength that we're bringing in a new way that we didn't realize? And for you and I, probably it's become certain, you know, second nature, but sometimes it's second nature in certain contexts and not in other context. Mm. And I wonder if maybe this is what I would throw out there to your listeners is notice in your daily life what you can reflect back to others and how powerful that could be if we had an intention around building each other up in that way and looking for those beautiful things that can be so reflective and powerful for another person.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was on my social media this morning and I got a message from somebody that was such a beautiful message that reflected back to me what they got out of something that I had put out there. And, you know, you never get tired of hearing those things, right? Mm-hmm. You never get tired of somebody saying something that makes you feel appreciated. Even, you know, it could be a word, it could be an act, it could be just something that you've inspired somebody with. But mm-hmm. I think what you're saying and what I'm getting out of it is we help each other.
Yes.
And that's what we're here for. We're not here alone. Mm-hmm. We're not on an island. We're here to help mm-hmm. each other. And the work that you do, because you've gone through that and you've studied it and you know what it is all about as far as this transition time, you are well equipped to point out some things that people can't see.
Yes.
And I think we can all do that as mm-hmm. we've just been discussing. And yeah, what a wonderful thing if after listening to this podcast, the next interaction you have with someone, point something out that, you know, would maybe they don't see, maybe they mm-hmm. do. Doesn't matter. You never get tired of hearing the aspects of yourself that make a difference in the world.
It's very affirming. And I think when we're thinking about, you know, bringing that unique contribution, just how affirming it is to see that in practice and noticed and appreciated. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate you listening. Thanks so much. Please go to speakpipe.com/Deborah Jones to share what you thought about this episode and what you'd like to hear next on Own the Gray. This episode brought to you by Lunch with a Healer podcast. The best conversations happen when you're having lunch with a friend, especially when one is a healer. Pull up a chair at lunchwithahealer.com.